All right, everyone. I am here with Ben Levitt. You know the drill. This is the debate you've all been waiting for. It basically should be the thing opening up the Logan Paul Floyd Mayweather fight. It is the most anticipated bout of the year, where we are trying to figure out what the true best social media platform to grow on is in 2021. It's about to get heated. Get your popcorn. Don't just get a coffee. Throw some whiskey in there, all right? This is about to get intense, I can already tell. So let's go ahead and just start off with like the basic one here. Let's talk about Facebook, all right? What still exists over there? I'll let you start here. Just tell me like the good, bad, and the ugly, what you see with Facebook.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to start because I got a ton of questions there. So I think the good is their paid ads platform is probably the most sophisticated paid ads platform really out there. Honestly, probably even more use cases than Google in a lot of ways. But just because how many people go on there and how consistently they're on there. I saw a stat somewhere that like a third of the entire world, or maybe it was a third or a quarter of the entire world, logs onto Facebook on a monthly basis. And that's just staggering to even think about, that it's in the billions of people per month. I think the bad is the iOS update, which is potentially going to limit, I think, Facebook's biggest strength. So that's obviously not a good thing. And then secondly, their organic reach there is truly, truly awful. Like, I think it's at this point, on average, looking at about 1% organic reach to your following on, like, say, a Facebook page. So that's definitely not a ton to work with. I think if you're going to use that platform, it should primarily be for like purchase intent things, and you're probably going to be paying for that traffic. So that's probably the bad and ugly part of it.
Okay. Yeah, I'd say for good, apart from the ads, Facebook groups is still good. But I mean, it seems like it's really fallen off the cliff in the last year or so. Maybe I'm just talking about my own group, but it seems like I don't really care about participating in other people's groups and such. Okay. They're not very active. And the few groups that I am in that like are paid groups, you know, like they're part of a course that I'm in. Those are probably the better groups that I'm in because people feel more committed to being in there, and they're, you know, usually they know what they're doing. You know, they're higher up and they're farther along in their social media journey or entrepreneur journey. So there's good stuff in there, but still, like the amount of times that you even get notified when someone posts in the group, it's so rare, and you're not probably, people aren't like actively going into the group like, oh, did anyone else post? So
yeah,
it doesn't seem like Facebook groups is really a big thing either. I just like how you can collect an email when someone comes into the group.
That's super powerful.
So I use a program called Groups Pro that just like syncs with, it's a Chrome extension. So when you're looking at the page of member requests, you can press like accept all, and then it will go through and get their emails and then sync it with your CRM. So you don't have to like copy and paste all of them over. So I like it for that. But yeah, the iOS 14 update, I don't think it's going to put Facebook as like, it's still going to be the top for targeting, right? It's still going to have like the most information on people, on their buying tendencies and everything. So I don't think it will be a huge effect, but I've only run like one or two ad campaigns since it started going on. So I might just be being optimistic. I kind of look at these things like, okay, I think a lot of people will stop advertising now, or maybe it just makes it harder. So it's just a little bit higher barrier to entry. So there's pros and cons with that. But overall, Facebook, what's your final verdict on it? On if someone is just starting their business right now, what's the extent that you would go with them taking on Facebook?
Yeah, so I think having a Facebook page is a no-brainer. And I think the fact that you can connect that with your Instagram, which I'm sure we'll talk on later, makes it a total no-brainer to have, because it only takes a few minutes to set that up. And you may as well have that virtual real estate to send traffic to if people are using Facebook as their preferred means of finding someone. And then in addition to, I love that you mentioned Facebook groups, because while they may not be what they were maybe even a year ago, they're still really, really powerful. And I actually came across a guy who his whole business is owning and operating Facebook groups. So that should speak to the fact that there is true potential here. So if you can build an audience or a connected community in any sort of niche or even a local area, there is true value in that, in the, especially the tighter knit group it is. So I think if you're a business owner, you should definitely at least have a Facebook page. And then if you get to the point where you want to explore any sort of paid ads at all, Facebook is a great place to start.
And obviously it's where you set it up to get Instagram going too.
Exactly.
So what is your, before we move on to the next one here, what do you do for paid ads exactly? What have you found to be like your favorite way to spend money on ads? Do you just go directly to, are you selling the product usually, or do you use ads to grow an audience more?
So typically if I'm running ads, so for my agency and my ads team, they're doing typically for businesses. So I honestly don't really push people to run ads to grow a following. I just don't see that the ROI is there as ads get more and more expensive. I think your time is probably better put in terms of creating great organic content that's niche specific. But so I typically gear the ads focus towards either nurturing, finding, or acquiring customers.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. It's when you turn on purchase conversions, like Facebook knows who buys stuff. You can usually find some very quality people through there and get some good ROI, even though it is a pretty difficult game and you may have to spend a good amount before it's profitable. I think that's what I'd say about the ugly of Facebook ads is most people are not profitable and are far from it even. Most people, even if they have a great offer and website, they aren't willing to spend the amount of money on testing or even knowing really how marketing works to be able to come up with the marketing angles. And they've got like their ad just says like, buy this for 50% off. They don't really know how to craft a message that stops the scroll and does all that and sets up the retargeting. So there's a lot to it to create a profitable Facebook ad campaign is probably what I'd say is the ugliest. Most people are losing a lot of money on it.
Yeah, I think so many people discount how much really goes into running a successful ad from a targeting perspective, but just from basic marketing fundamentals, like putting together a very compelling narrative in terms of like a hook with your copy and then the actual creative itself. Like that stuff matters so much. I think so many people just run an ad and then they're just mad that it didn't make them a millionaire. And then they just stop, where it's like, you have to put some accountability on you and think about someone on the other side of the screen. Are you really doing enough to capture their attention? And more often than not, people just aren't.
People think, oh, I thought Facebook ads were good and I tried them and they didn't work. So it's just like, okay, you must be doing them wrong or could be doing them better. And I had to spend seriously like upwards at like $5,000 to $10,000 before I was getting like course sales at all. When I first started doing a webinar, I had to spend so much money and tweaking the webinar. Like it's also the webinar, right? I was spending money to send traffic there. So I'm like, I don't know where the fallout is, but it is like, that's just the first half of it, right? That's the front end. So yeah, it's just a really difficult game, but highly rewarding if you can make it happen. So it seems like we're pretty on the same page with Facebook. But let's move on to Instagram here. So go ahead, tell me the good, bad, and the ugly with Instagram.
So I think the good is, I think that, especially from a business owner, I think Instagram is becoming far more of the hub for purchasing. And that's really, really valuable. And I think in a lot of ways, your Instagram account is slowly replacing the need for a website. Because I think a ton of people are coming to Instagram with the intent to purchase, or they're so familiarized with making purchases through Instagram. And I think the features and updates that Instagram is making is pushing it that way slowly and slowly. And I think that if they can somehow improve the content lifespan over there, it'll make it far more valuable to create content. And I think that's a big component of their increased focus on search. And if they're able to do that, that could be very, very good. So I think the good things are the business focus. Also, there's very few barriers to entry. It's pretty easy to create some content over to Instagram. The bad, I'd say, is that organic reach is obviously diminished over the years as competition has increased. And I would say that in addition to that, another thing that's very annoying, I don't know if this is bad or ugly, but it's really annoying how they roll out features in a very staggered way that still some people still don't have reels. And that's just like mind-blowing to me, because even they're coming out and saying everyone should be posting reels, and a decent chunk of the population doesn't even have them. So that'd be my two cents. I love Instagram, don't get me wrong, but some of that stuff is quite annoying.
Did you have reels right away?
So no, I didn't have reels right away. And then even when I got it, I was stuck at 15 seconds for so long, like so long. And then randomly one day I got the 30 seconds, and that's what I currently have right now.
You don't have 60 yet?
Nope. And I wish I did, because I have some videos that are ready to go that are like 40 seconds. And I just can't post them because I'm still capped at that 30. Thank you.
Did you know that you can change what you taste by what you hear? How can you use sound to make a deeper connection with your clients? Can we be healed with sound? Sound influences people in their buying decisions and their daily lives. In the podcast Audio Branding, I explore all of this, both with my own observations as a voice actor of over 15 years and by interviewing knowledgeable professionals in the field of advertising, marketing, music, and science. To have a listen for yourself, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com.
Yeah, it because TikTok has 60, it makes it a lot easier to repurpose the content when you can get to 60 seconds there. I've met one other person. She's from Canada too. I don't know if it's a Canadian thing. That doesn't have Reels yet.
Wow,
she doesn't, and she has like 35k followers.
Wow, that's brutal.
So, I mean, there's only so much you can do. Like, people try to uninstall the app and reinstall it and hope it's there, but it usually doesn't do anything. So it is really weird how they roll out features that slowly. I mean, I get if they want to test it in an area for a couple months, but for someone to not have Reels when it's obviously just well known that it's a thing, it seems weird that they're still testing. We need a few of you to just not have Reels yet so we can test. You won't be able to grow nearly as fast because it's the best organic reach you can get on a post right now. But we need to test if we want to get rid of them or something.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. I think I just thought about one other ugly thing too, is the spam comments. That's something that they need to deal with for sure. Like, oh, make money in Forex, all that crap. And then the DMs too. Like, and there is a way to deal with
DMs. I sign
up
for all of those.
More so, but comments.
Oh, yeah. That was how Vine ended, is just way too many automation software bots going around on there. So organic reach, what would you say is like truly how dead it is? Is it like, because I think some people, like if you got an amazing account, then you might not be realizing it. You might even be doing better because they're just favoring top content more and more. How should people really wrap their mind around organic reach being dead? Is this another thing where point the finger at yourself and still try to improve?
Or 100%. You nailed it there, because it's not dead, and it's nowhere near dead. It's just, it is harder than ever for a few reasons. Like, it's very much authority driven now. So it takes some compounding to get to a point where you're gonna get mass organic reach, and it's harder than ever to get to that point where you have that trust and that size of an audience. So it really comes down to, are you willing to do the things that it takes to stand out, to be that 1%? Because there's now way more people competing for less attention. So like, naturally, it's supply and demand. Like, that's the way that it's going to go. It's gonna be more difficult to come by. And you're not paying for this in terms of money. You're paying for it in terms of your effort and creativity. So I think it's still absolutely attainable. Like, I still work with people who their pages grow very quickly, very fast. I still grow pages pretty quickly, pretty fast. It comes down to understanding your audience, posting content that isn't like everybody else is posting, and having a bit of patience. Like, so many people, they'll DM me and they're like, oh, my account, Instagram sucks. My account hasn't grown. And I've seen they posted like 5 times. It's like, how can you possibly expect thousands of followers from 5 selfies of yourself? Like, that doesn't even make sense.
And they're just like blurry.
Exactly. They're just like,
with no hashtag.
The best thing, sorry to cut you off, man. The best thing is like when someone will DM me that, and then they'll be like, my content is just like X person, but I'm not growing. And then the person they'll send me is like a celebrity. And I'm like, no shit. Like, obviously they're growing. They're a celebrity. They're in movies. Like, they can get away with posting a selfie because that is their point of value. If you're not a celebrity, you need to be something for someone. Like, that's what you have to be, as a point of value. And I think too few people get that. And that kind of makes the whole disconnect happen there. But it's not dead, in my opinion, not at all.
There's not really a situation that a business should not be on Instagram. I feel like no matter what you are, what industry, that's the only platform that it's like a for sure given. Mostly because like DMing, and so many people are on there, right? Just like you can message people, and then stories. Like, obviously, it's got so many features right now. What do you think? Too many features, or like if there's one feature they could get rid of, what would it be?
I do like the fact that they give you a ton of different features, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this question afterwards too. But I think they need to do a better job of educating their users. Like, obviously that leaves a space open for people like yourself and me, but like it's crazy that they have this huge user base and very few resources on how to actually use these things the right way in the way that serves Instagram and them. And that's one thing you have to understand too, is that to get favorable treatment, really at the end of the day, you got to do what Instagram wants you to do because they're a self, they're a for-profit business. That's how things go. So I think that that's my biggest confusion with them, is how little support they give to their users as to what works versus what doesn't and how to even use what they have. But if I had to get rid of one feature, that's tough. I don't think I've ever posted an IGTV. So I'd say maybe that. I just think that people have become so accustomed to quick dopamine hits on Instagram, very quick. And that's just the total opposite of what an IGTV is. So if I had to get rid of one, that's probably what's going. But how about you?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's not catered to the app, especially when people record their live on there and then reshare their live, and the quality is really bad, like just by default, no matter how you did it, no matter how good your phone is or your internet connection, it's just gonna post really crappy quality video, which instantly hurts you. And then these lives are people like, oh, am I live? Oh, okay, we're live. Okay, guys. Like it's just not the speed of content that the app wants. So I haven't really seen many people do that right. I will say that I have a student in one of my courses that does lives and he interviews other people. So he interviews like other big accounts on live, and he sets his background to be a video. Like, so he's in the BMX industry and he interviews other BMX pros, and in the background is just BMX footage going on the whole time. So you can kind of just watch that while the interview is going on if you want to, but it really does make it a lot more engaging, and he's seen a lot better results. It seems like it would be, but I mean, like imagine like it's going on behind me here. Like you can only see so much of it. I think it's just kind of like just sets the vibe, you can't fully see what's going on. But it works for him pretty well. And every time I see it, I do watch for a little bit. So that's one way to make it work. But I really think, if they got rid of IGTV, for the few people that actually watch like that 10-minute IGTV, that's like 30 posts that they would have consumed.
Yes.
Of other posts. So that would naturally help engagement a lot right there, just helping people get through more posts.
So what do you say when people come to you saying that like Instagram's dead or a waste of time? Like what is your response to that?
My auto response is usually, just point the finger at yourself, even though I do largely agree with them in a lot of ways. I think it's just part of being a business owner that you have to accept 100% responsibility for everything, even though it's like quite the burden to bear, even if your employee messes something up, you have to blame it on your training. The more you don't point the finger at yourself, the more you're just not going to be able to find a solution to the problem. Even if you really aren't at fault and all of that stuff, it's still just own it either way and say, well, what could I do, right? Like, are people having success on Instagram? Yes. So right there, there's my statement is pretty invalid that it exists for other people. So no one's getting like special or like their account isn't being treated bad, compared to other accounts. When someone's reach is down, it's affecting everyone else the same, unless you've been using a ton of banned hashtags or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's actually something I'll ask you about that I've usually had a little more of a controversial opinion on, is just shadow bans. If they're real or not. What do you think?
So for a while, Instagram had said that they're not real. And then I think that I recall someone from the Instagram saying that they are real, but they happen very, very, very rarely and for just cause. It's apparent, that's in layman's terms what the representative said. So I think they can be real, but typically if people are receiving them, they earned them. Like they've done things that violated the terms of service, stuff that they're clearly not supposed to be doing. And then they get caught or they get penalized, and then they're angry about it. So I think that they do happen. I think more often than not, people who think that they have an think that they're shadow banned, it's really just because the content they're pumping out isn't great, or they're not doing things the right way consistently on an ongoing basis. I think that's more often the case. It's very easy to point your finger and be like, shadow ban, than it is to turn it around, like you said, and be like, I need to improve. So I think a lot of people, that's the case they're in. How about you?
Yeah, they'll say, well, I'm posting the same content that I've always posted, and that's always done well. But that's also like everyone else is improving, right? And just like people's eyes are getting more accustomed to higher quality video. If you try to go watch like a movie from even like the early 2000s, it looks like, what is this? Like an old movie, you know? So you have to level up as people are getting accustomed to seeing new things. I think it is whenever it's valid, it seems to be they used a banned hashtag. If they're like, look, but the content's awesome. I used 30 hashtags. I did a good posting time. All of this other stuff is good. It's usually just that they used a banned hashtag or that they used an unrelated hashtag. Because if I were to do, hashtag Jaguars, and then I do a social media post, and then a Jaguars fan sees it and like, what's this? And they say, don't show for this hashtag. It turns off the whole group. So I think it's usually one of those two things. Otherwise, it's usually just a content improvement. As far as them being real or not, I think it's one of those things where like, that's not how Instagram calls it, right? They're like, it was like made up by the users. So that's why they're like, what is a shadow ban? And that's why there's like a disconnect. And but they might be like, oh, you mean this? Like they have a different name for the block perhaps. But
that's
I think
true. I guess I never, that's a really good point actually. Cause that's a great way to avoid speaking to it, because if you have it named something different, you're not lying by saying a shadow ban doesn't exist if that's not what you call it. So that's actually a really good point.
I've heard someone say that, like Trust Score, you know that? Have you heard that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That they call it a goodness score over at the Instagram headquarters. Okay. Yeah, it's someone on, it was episode 92, I believe, for anyone that wants to go back, had someone that had a good friend that worked at Instagram and was exposing some secrets. So, all right, cool. So Instagram, people got to be there. It's just more difficult than ever. Point the finger at yourself, roll with the punches. Let's move on to YouTube. This is somewhere where I am extremely excited to get more involved with, and I'm becoming much more active on there. But this has been your bread and butter for the last few years here. When did you start?
So I started YouTube, I think my channel started in 2018, I think. That's when I first started the channel. The videos that I was posting there were god awful and nothing compared to like what I post now, not even in the same niche. So, but I believe the channel did start in 2018. I'm just pulling it up right now to see the
what
exact
was it in?
Date. Oh, 2016 is when I started my channel even. Okay. But I didn't start, I had it for like a year or two before I posted anything on it. And then, but I've been posting social media videos for about 2.5 years now.
What were you posting on there before?
So I started off in like the fitness niche. I was posting stuff about that. And then also I had torn my ACL. So I made videos about that experience. And that's really what was the catalyst for me finally stepping off the sidelines and getting in the game and starting to create content. And because that was a very Pardon?
Not stepping off the sidelines, like crawling off them.
Exactly. Rolling in, exactly, yeah, without a functional knee. So luckily, because that was a very underserved niche, I was getting like tens of thousands, even some of the videos had hundreds of thousands of views very, very quickly. And also because I had done a bunch of research before I ever even posted a video. So that was my first dip into the YouTube world. And then it just kind of snowballed from there.
Okay. So what's the good, bad, and the ugly with it?
There's so much good. Like I could talk about YouTube good for so long, but like any other platform, it's just you have to know how to use it. But for the good, the content lifespan there is, instead of days like you're looking at it for other platforms, it's years. And I mean that literally. I still have videos that are getting consistent 50 to 100 plus video views a day that were posted 2-3 years ago. So it's like that speaks to that is truly insane. And that's why you can shift your perspective on content so much more there from like a task or work to an investment, because not only can you keep getting views down the road, but it can go viral down the road. Like my first video that really popped off, it was cold for about 4 or 5 months, and you can watch the trajectory of views. And it was like cold. Maybe had 100 views over 4 months, and then randomly it started getting a few hundred a day, then a few thousand a day. So love that. I think it also converts the best. Like it is the easiest way to sell something because it's so human. There's a reason why salespeople exist, and you would know this better than anyone because you were a great salesperson yourself. People buy from people. Like that is what it is at the end of the day. And there's nothing more human than a person to person interaction. And through video, that's basically what you're achieving. So I love that. And then the search engine functionality brings the convertibility. I don't even know if that's a word, but the convertibility even higher because the purchase intent is right there. So like, I don't think people grasp how much money there is to be made on YouTube. Cause you can literally, if you found a good affiliate offer, you could literally make a YouTube channel dedicated to that and just gobble up every purchase intent keyword. And that could easily be making you a few thousand dollars a month in under a year's time. And like, that's boggling. Like that's more than most people make from their full-time job. So I love YouTube so much good. I could keep going on about good. The bad is it's going to be difficult to break through. There's also a kind of a lull period to break through, like at least 3-4 months for most channels at minimum, because that YouTube's just collecting data and conducting split tests on all of your content. Plus there's a lot to know, like, because if you don't have a few things right, you'll get no traction whatsoever. So if you don't get thumbnails and titles right, and then obviously the keywords that support that, you could never break through. And that's a very possible thing on YouTube, is if you don't figure that out. But if you constantly improve, the whole equation shifts from if you'll break out to when you'll break out. And that's what I love about YouTube, is it is very much a compounding process. So that's what I love about it. And that's also the ugly, if I had to give one. How about you?
Yeah. Dude, the good is unreal over there. I thought it was a lot higher competition than it seems to be. I started a new YouTube channel, actually, like in the crypto space, and yep. My second video is already at 2,000 views.
Wow.
So you can start with no subscribers and win the search game still, right? You can find these searches with a medium volume, we'll say. Like the high volume ones are probably taken. If you can be quick on something though, like I know you did like a dispo video, right? You did like a Clubhouse video immediately, right? And I think if I type in Clubhouse, you're number one still, or in the top three.
Yeah.
So you were just like quick on it, right? Even though you have a lot of subscribers, you still probably could have gotten there with a low subscriber account if you put out the same quality video, right? So I do think, yeah. And like you're saying, you can, it's evergreen content. You're still getting all this reach. Even with my podcast, you know, once an episode kind of gets buried, people usually start at the top and then they go however far down they go. But you only get so many views on your older episodes with that. It's kind of whatever you get in the first month or so is 80% of it. So yeah, I think YouTube, I mean, I needed to be on it earlier. It's definitely, I would consider it my main platform all of a sudden, just because I can see, even though some of my videos don't have many views at all, but my like when to post on Instagram is already, you know, starting to trend. Like you said, it can just all of a sudden start trending, and it doesn't feel like it's a waste of time when you're making the content. Like if I'm making an Instagram post and I'm going on hour one, I'm like, just post it, damn it. Like, who cares if it doesn't look that great? Just post it. With YouTube, I'm like, I'm going to give this another day. I'm going to edit it another day. And like, I will keep putting more and more effort into it and not feel like I'm wasting time, because I'm trying to make page one content here. So I do like, it's just easier to explain points on that than Instagram. A lot of the things that I like to talk about are hard to fully convey in an Instagram post.
I agree.
Right? It's really hard to find like, what's a good tip that I can explain in a second. So it's really hard to give true value over there, and hard for people to get to know you just from your Instagram. When people find you from a video and then they go over to your Instagram, it's like they already know you a little bit. So I would think it would help your Instagram engagement just because of the level that your followers feel connected to you before they go over and follow you. The bad and the ugly, I used to think it was the competition, but I don't think it is. I think it's just that it's high barrier to entry because you are trying to make page one content. So like, honestly, when I started, I don't think I would have done that great on YouTube. Like when I started my podcast, I'm sure it would have grown faster. It would have been good. And I would have just, like you, just had a story of a bunch of videos that weren't that great that I just needed to get through. And I would have gone through them earlier, but I didn't have a nice camera. Do you need one? No, but most of the YouTubers that people subscribe to do have nice gear, right? You do want lighting. You do want a nice mic. It can get expensive. You are now relying on you being able to edit videos as well as create thumbnails, as well as write the titles and everything. So I think because I had all the experience with Instagram and podcasts and everything, I already had the skill sets like when I wanted to get started, but it really is a much higher skill set that's necessary. And I think a lot of people are scared of being on camera, which again, just looks like a benefit to me that it's like, oh, it's higher barrier to entry. It's just one other thing that if you can get over that fear, you're already separating yourself from so many people. And if you pursue opportunities that don't have that, it's just easy for it to get saturated, like Instagram, right? It's like, it's low barrier to entry to create content. That's why the reach goes down over time. Everyone can just make a post in a few minutes if they want to. So yeah, I think the ugly is really just like the equipment costs and the skill sets that is required to create page one content. Other than that, the algorithm is so simple too, that it's like, oh yeah, watch time and likes and subscribes. I know there's probably some more to it, but ultimately like people watch the whole video and they like it, like YouTube's going to pick it up. So
yeah,
not much ugly.
No, there really isn't. And yeah, you could, like, there's tons of nuances to the algorithm, but really if you have a video that a lot of people click and they stay watching it, it's going to get pushed. And it is that simple. I just think that it can be difficult, like you said, to get to the point where you're achieving both of those things. And I think a lot of people maybe they discredit how much effort and expertise really goes into that. And a lot of people are starting YouTube channels for the wrong reason. I think a lot of people want to be YouTubers. I think that that word is changing over time. I think a lot of people still view YouTuber as like Jake and Logan Paul. And if that's your goal or your expectation, then you're setting yourself up for failure. But if you're a business owner or a thought leader, then there are few better, I don't even know if there is a better place to be to help build your name, your authority, and your income too.
Agreed. Yeah. Well, just so we can keep our competition low, what can we say bad about it?
Exactly. Well, I think you nailed it on the head. The people don't like hearing their own voice. They don't like seeing themselves on camera. So I think that is a huge thing to get over. I think there's a lot of fear of the unknown because there are so many things to get right. And I think a lot of people make the mistake of attaching their self-worth to how their videos perform, especially early, and they get embarrassed that there's not millions of people watching. And I think on top of that, people mistake what success is. So they think that success is just these vanity metrics and thousands of views and hundreds of thousands of views, where is you really got to understand, like, why are you here? If you're here for business purposes, like I've had some clients that are making crazy amounts of money off of very small views because they're very targeted and they're high value customers or potential customers. So really figuring out what value is and setting your expectations off of what you're trying to do. Because if you're trying to be a subject matter expert in a very obscure topic, you can't expect millions and millions of views. The audience just isn't there. So success for you may be 1,000 subscribers, but if it's helping bring money to your business, it's time well spent.
Have you heard of iOS, by the way, like the crypto competitor to YouTube?
No, I haven't.
It's like AIOZ. I'm not worried about it. You don't need to be worried about it, but it's actually the first video I came out with that just started getting a ton of views because I was the first person to come out with a negative video on it. Okay. And that's kind of what you're saying there is the thing that you can get defeated on in YouTube is the potential, like, negative comments are going to come in if you come out with like a controversial piece and such, right? So like that video that I came out with, I think it has like 130 dislikes and like 40 likes. Just to put it into perspective, because I'm talking about something a lot of people are invested in. I just brought it up just because it's really the only competitor to YouTube that I've seen. But I wouldn't be worried about it. Not at all, really. So it doesn't seem like they're going to have competition like Facebook and Instagram do as much for people's attention. It's like, if you want to learn something, you're going to go to YouTube, right? You're not going to.
Absolutely.
But Instagram, TikTok, Facebook do compete for the same leisure time, I feel like, out of people, mm-hmm. right? So can get hurt. So let's move on to TikTok. What's the good and bad and the ugly for you?
So I think the good here is that it's still probably the fastest place where you can grow an audience, the easiest, and mm-hmm. because of how their algorithm functions, that if you have a video that gives solid data, it doesn't matter if you're brand new, it can still get millions of views. And especially if you do that in a targeted niche, it can be very easy to grow a large following very, very quickly. But the blessing of that is also the curse of TikTok too, because the fact that it's so easy to grow means that the relationships that you have with your followers is going to be diminished than it probably would be on other platforms. And plus, there's no guarantee that people who followed you will ever even see your content again. There's no guarantee. So funneling that traffic off of TikTok is very, very difficult to do because of how much they nailed consumption there. Like, it's all geared towards more, consuming more, more, more. So to build a relationship and really grab someone and hook them is going to be difficult to do. So that's the good is also the bad when it comes to TikTok.
Yeah, you can get videos to go totally viral on there. I've gotten two videos to get over a million views. One of them got like 8.6 and one of them is at like 2.7, 2.8 right now. Both were the dumbest posts I've ever done with literally no value in them. So it is really, it's hard to attract a good audience, right? Like when I post like my reels that are informative, like here's how to do this with your hashtags or like something that's actually good advice for social media, it goes nowhere over there. Like if I follow a trend, it does well. So like the good is like you really can go viral, but out of those, you know, 10 plus million views between those two things, it probably translated to less than 5 Instagram followers. Mm. Like they don't say, oh, that was such a cool post. Let me go over to their account. Oh, they have an Instagram too. Like it's not really translating for me. Maybe if you're like a model or an influencer and like it's maybe has a little higher conversion factor. But it just seems like, you know, if I just follow a trend, it doesn't really mean, oh, I want to follow this guy on Instagram. They're just going to like that post. And because the follow button is on the post, mm-hmm. a lot of people do follow people, even though the rest of their content might not be anything like that. And I feel like my engagement is kind of hurt almost from those viral posts just because they weren't social media related at all, right? Like not even business or entrepreneur related. So I got so many followers from it. Like I literally got like 10,000 followers from like that first post that went viral. Like wow. My 17K on TikTok has been like 16,000 from those two posts. And then the rest of it, who knows? So like the good is you really can go viral and get a lot of followers. So that can be good for your brand credibility. And you can find some way. I'm sure there's better ways that I could have funneled that traffic over to Instagram. You know, like more intently, but even still, like, I don't know how I'd make a post that goes viral and still has the intent with go check out my Instagram, you know, unless I just yell it at the end. So maybe that would be a good way. The bad is if I try to go on there to like, let's go see what's trending and I'm going to model one of the trends, go get some ideas for some TikTok posts. I blink, 3 hours has gone by and I've done nothing. It is the most addicting, high dopamine stimulating platform ever. Like I could stay on TikTok for 8 hours way easier than I could stay on Instagram for 8 hours.
For sure.
Just because it's so pure entertainment. And that's a great part of it, that there is a social media platform that still it's really hard for marketers to go over there and take over. You know, so I think for that reason, like it's not going anywhere for a long time. Like people love that app and there's a content that you can put out on TikTok that wouldn't even make sense to put out anywhere else, right? Not every one of my TikToks becomes a reel. But yeah, the ugly is truly just the addicting nature of it. And I think also the paid ads over there, I bet are really sexy numbers as far as like impressions go. I bet it's really cheap because there's only so many people doing it. But to make an ad that blends in with the natural TikTok scroll is really difficult for most products. Like if you're selling something that like the really popular products over there are like upgrades to people's rooms, right? Like lights for your rooms, or even just content creator things like ring lights and such like that. If you're not like selling one of those obvious things to like that demographic, I think it would be really hard to make an ad that's like promoting, you know, even like the, or like a podcast, right? If you wanted to make an ad that was promoting to go listen to your podcast, which is usually not something people spend money on because it's not a direct sale after, but if you're just like spending it to grow your audience, it would be really difficult to do. But at the same time, it's probably really simple. It could be a really simple, it would be like, oh, just use this audio, right? Like that's what the answer would be. It would be like, use this audio. But it really seems like it's difficult to create awesome marketing that blends in naturally over there is really difficult.
Yeah. I think to build a valuable audience over there, it's important to not just ride trends. I think if you're going to use a trend, the more that you can make it centered around your niche, the more potential value you're going to have from those followers. But I will say that one other good thing I wanted to mention there is their live is still a super powerful tool because of the fact that it puts new people into your live all the time that have never come across your content before. And that as a tool to convert people over to your Instagram is incredibly powerful. Like I've seen that like a wildly high percentage of people who come into my live and stay that I respond back to come over and follow me on Instagram. So that's one way that you can try to combat the negative sides of it. But that's obviously a lot of time, a lot of effort to connect with those people, but it does work.
What are you doing on these lives? Are you just going live and being like, who's got a question?
Exactly. So I'll do like social media Q&A or whatever. Like I used to do it pretty consistently and it was working actually very, very well, but obviously it's very time consuming and I'd plan to go on there for like 30 minutes and then I'd look up and I'd been on there for 2 hours and I was like, okay, I got maybe 15 Instagram followers of that, but is that really a good use of my time for my business, right? So it depends on what your goals and your intentions are at the time, but it is still, it's crazy that they've thrown new people in there. Like that's still a big opportunity.
The funny thing for us, I mean, it still is like kind of a waste of time if we would keep it up, but if you go over there and you're on there for a couple hours and you get like 15 Instagram followers and you're like, I don't know if that was worth it. It still is like, even if it's not, there's your next YouTube episode or, we get to report on that. But then it's like, okay, now I'm done with it. But we still have to turn over all these stones to really get our opinion on them. For sure. So like with that being said, with these apps that you look at the clock, you've been on for multiple hours and not a ton has happened. I can't help but think of Clubhouse with that. That's coming. So give me the good and bad and the ugly of Clubhouse.
The good is the opportunity to learn from people. And I think the good was great when it was brand new that because everybody just had major FOMOs and people were locked inside. So true subject matter experts were just throwing it all away, like giving away some great nuggets over there because it just seemed like it was just a conversation. And I think that so people felt free to share more than they typically would or what they typically hide behind a paywall. So that was really, really cool. I think that's diminishing over time. I think the other good is the opportunity to connect with people from like a networking perspective because conversation just elevates the speed in which you can connect with someone. So I think that's huge. I think the bad is it's a very easy time suck. So you can spend hours in there thinking you're being highly productive, but what did you really walk away from that with? And I think that's what I came to with myself. Even though I was speaking on stages, I still be like, I was on here for 3 or 4 hours. And I was like, what did I really get out of this? And oftentimes it wasn't what I had hoped it would be or what I would expect to receive from 3 or 4 hours of my time and effort and expertise. So I think the big time suck nature is huge. I think it's also kind of like people are like, it's almost like a cult following over there. Like people who are like serious Clubhousers are like, they like swear by that. So I think that's the bad. And I also think that it's so easy to like get that feature elsewhere. But I think they currently do have the cool factor. So it'll be interesting if they're able to see if they're able to keep that once COVID is over. And once more platforms like Twitter and I'm sure others will create very competitive, similar products. But the other cool thing is I think they're coming to Android very, very soon. So that
I think it just came out actually.
Yeah, I thought that was today, right? So I'd be curious to see how that changes things. But I know you just released a video on Clubhouse pretty recently, so I'm sure you've got some thoughts to share.
I did, yeah. And I gave the good at the beginning of the video because it really feels like you're being social on there. Like if like the way I put in the episode is like, if you're feeling like extroverted and you're like, I just got to talk to someone and none of my friends can hang out. Like you can go in Clubhouse and feel like you got some hanging out in, right? But that's just it. Like you're hanging out. You're not being ultra productive. It's really hard to be productive on there. When I was running my own rooms, these were really good for a few weeks. And I really try to like moderate and move that conversation along, like no dead air, no one giving answers longer than they need to or giving the same answers as other people. There's only so much control you have without being like a dick and cutting people off, right? But I would try to – like I'd be on there for like 3 hours and like the max the room got was probably like 50 or 60. And like at that point, I was like, this is pretty awesome. And – but when I would do just general room topics that weren't like social media related, it really wouldn't turn into followers for me in the end. When I would do like the social media rooms – then it would just become like we're saying the same stuff over and over, or like you couldn't really dive into anything specific. Like people would come on. I did like Instagram roasts rooms, like Instagram audits essentially. And then after a while, I'm like, I'm just telling everyone the same thing. I was just like, this isn't even that valuable for people in the audience if they've been in here for like 2-3 hours, because there's only so much you can like, you know, say about someone's Instagram account unless we're just talking about what, like inventing content ideas for them, right? But I'm not inventing content ideas. So it's just checking like the technicals and the hashtags and stuff like that. So it just was like, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to keep this up without just going into random topics, which weren't translating for me. But now, like basically the last 2 or 3 rooms I ran, I sat there for like 10, 15 minutes and like no one came. So I feel like if you don't get 5 moderators, like who are agreeing to start it with you, yeah, it's really difficult for that thing to snowball, or you're going to be sitting there for a long time for it to snowball. Like if you have like just you and one other moderator, someone else comes in the room and they're in the audience and they just leave a second later because they realize like there's only 2 people here. Like, so you really got to like have it a lot of people on board, which is just not sustainable like week after week to find like new entrepreneurs without it being like quite the task for you. So apart from that, just the information that you get over there, like you were saying at the beginning, I remember being in a room, it was like Ty Lopez was speaking, and I know he's got a lot of bad rap on him, but I'm still like, whatever, he's multimillionaire, I'll hear what he has to say. It's just kind of crazy that he's speaking live right now. You know, Grant Cardone, I was in a room that was like, it was about NFTs, and it was like Paris Hilton and Odessa and Deadmau5 and like Drake Bell and like all these like celebrities, like a lot of people that I grew up watching on Disney Channel and stuff too. Like this is kind of crazy, but like, I feel like they're not on there anymore. Like they are kind of just like over it. Right. Yes. So like a lot of these people, these high level people that were just giving out info that was behind a paid wall before isn't really happening as much. And it's just, it's already lost the coolness factor. Last thing I'll say about it, like they just added a feature to be able to just like donate to someone.
Yes.
Like, totally. So if I'm just in the room and I'm dropping value, you can be like, I'm going to give this guy $1. Like, what do you think about that?
I think that that could be potentially big, but I think you'd have to structure the room in a way that would promote that. I think that's a big deal. I've never been in a, watched a video and I'm like, I want to throw money at someone, but like, that may be different for other people, but so I think you'd have to structure the conversation in a way that leads to that. And I was actually just looking through my phone because at one point Grant Cardone followed me, but he's since unfollowed me. So there's an update there.
Bastard.
Yeah, I know. So, but yeah, that speaks to the fact that there are people on there who typically wouldn't give their time, but they now are. And on a personal note, a friend of mine, Farouk, he has kind of become like the Clubhouse guy. And so he was like big on Instagram for a long time. And then he didn't love it as much anymore. And then, so when this opportunity came, he doubled down on it. Now his whole business is Clubhouse. So there obviously was massive opportunity, but he was very early and he devoted so much time and effort where he is now part of like the Clubhouse culture. And it is almost like a cult. Like there, it's like the same people on every stage within their rooms, right? So if you're not part of that in crew, it's unlikely you're going to get up and stay there, right? Like you might get up to ask a question, but they're probably going to kick you back down because these people have spent so long together. They're now tight. It's like anything in real life with people, right? Like you take care of your own. And now like the Clubhouse people have like developed their own kind of thing. So I would agree with pretty well everything you said there. It's not too not too sexy for the argument, but I would agree with most of what you said.
Is Farouk still pretty active on there?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like his yeah. whole thing is yeah, yeah. Like he's on there truly every day for hours a day. Like that's mm-hmm, his mm-hmm. their business now is they are like the clubhouse people. So when celebrities want to join, like they'll hit up Farouk and then like they'll host rooms with them to instantly grow their following very quickly.
I've seen that. I was in a room with Jake Paul that was being yep. interviewed by Farouk about NFTs and such. Real quick, give me your thoughts on NFTs.
So I think NFTs are an incredibly cool concept, and I think that the applications will be far-reaching, and I think that as time moves on, it'll really form its own. I think right now it's kind of a crapshoot. It's like a Wild West where everyone just thinks that they're going to become billionaires off NFTs and things like that, and everyone should have an NFT. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think that crypto and NFTs is the future. Like I'm a massive believer in the space, and I think what it can do for the things that we already love, I think it can take it to the next level. Like especially like the concept, this is what really sold it to me because I like to play video games, and the thought of potentially like owning something within a game that like only you own and it's truly yours and you could potentially sell that and truly own that, that's a very empowering thing for something that is a massive part of people's lives. So I think what it takes to sell you on it is a personal connection to something. And I think we're going to get to the point where almost every person, regardless of your interests and loves, there's going to be a use case that dramatically improves that experience for you. And that's why I think that it'll be here for the long haul.
It would definitely be here for the long haul. Yeah. Like the crypto market, it could go down to like one currency in the end though. Too. Yes. You know, there's over 9,000 right now. Yeah, 2 months ago, there was 5,000.
That's nuts.
Last week there was like 7,000, I thought. And then like this week I checked and it was like 9,000. Like there is no regulations in there. So it's that's kind of like my crypto YouTube channel is exposing the scams in crypto. Nice. Honestly. So I was just like, no one's doing this. So whatever. I hate to be the CoffeeZilla of the crypto world, but
it'll probably blow up, man.
Those videos that, yeah, they're, my first three videos are all over 2,500 views now with one of them over 5K.
And what's the name of the channel?
Well, this is, so I posted my first crypto videos on my Derek Vidal channel, but yeah. How to Crypto is the new one. So nice. I basically, it's called that because I just go try to use the applications. I just go try to use the thing that they, are talking like, so it's so much bought on ideas, right? Like so much is like, it's decentralized this or that or whatever. Like iOS is just like, it's going to take over YouTube. It's the crypto of YouTube. BitCloud, it's the crypto of Twitter. Like, but all of them, dude, like have just so much scam stuff written all over them. And it's just like, it's not even solving a real world problem. Like no one is like, oh, fucking centralized YouTube. You know, like no one has a problem with it. Like, so it's just like, they're making up problems in a lot of the cases.
Yeah. It's a use case land grab right now because it's new. So like, I think this is very like similar to the .com bubble. And I think that a lot of people are going to get caught losing a lot of money, but there's also going to be a lot of people who make generational wealth off of it too. Right. So it's just hoping that you end up on the right side of the equation and hopefully your videos can help more people do that.
Yeah, hopefully. I've been mostly right so far about the ones that we're going to tank. They're like half of what the price is when I covered them. But I try not to talk about the price at all. I'm just going to use the project and see if it even works.
Nice.
So, all right. Got our thoughts out on Clubhouse and crypto. We had to throw that in there. I think most people in the entrepreneurship space have at least dabbled in crypto in some way. So that's why it's like, all right, sure. It's probably useful.
Yeah. I keep seeing one thing. So like a lot of groups for these crypto, like they'll communicate on Telegram. So like I keep seeing more and more of my entrepreneur friends downloading Telegram. And because if you have someone as a contact on your phone, it tells you if they've downloaded it. So I keep seeing this and I'm like, oh, you're into crypto.
Telegram, is it like... I'm not on there. Is it small? Is it like Discord?
Very, very similar. So, okay. So most of these crypto projects, they're starting their own private Telegram group for investors. And you need the app and it's attached to your phone number. So as soon as a contact of yours joins, like it'll say like so-and-so joined Telegram. So all these people, they're like almost everyone who's joining is like an entrepreneur friend of mine. And I'm just like, I know why you downloaded this. You're into the crypto space now.
And you can almost say the same about Twitter too. Well, the last platform we need to cover here, it's very crypto driven right now. What's the good, bad, and the ugly of Twitter?
Yeah, you're spot on there. And I've learned even a ton about crypto from Twitter and people on Twitter. I think it's because of how fast information can move there. And so it kind of actually builds off of one of my YouTube strategies to tie it all together is why I follow like blogs and written content is because that just flows far faster. So Twitter is like the epitome of that fast flowing information. And I think it also has some of the elements that made Clubhouse so compelling is that people do feel like it's very conversational. So you have access to people that would be very hard to come by. They're going to see your tweet response to them and they're likely to respond. And two, they share information there that they probably wouldn't share anywhere else. So I've learned a ton in the e-com space. I even learned in social media over there, a ton in crypto. If you can find the right people there, the value you can take from it is insane. I don't use it really as a growth tool for myself. I use it more of as a consumer over there, but I've taken so much from it. So I'd say the good is who you can have access to, what you can learn. The bad is it can be difficult to grow an audience if you're not a well-established person or you're not really willing to grind it out. And the ugly would be there is no like regulation in terms of what's true versus what's not. So I think you have to develop a good sense of sniffing out BS. So I think that's probably the ugliest. It's very easy for people to believe something that's not true. But I love Twitter and I've loved it more over the past year or so. And it actually came from a friend of mine. His name's Chase Diamond. He's a great email marketer. And he was actually the one who's like, are you spending time on Twitter? And I'm like, no, not really. He's like, I would get on there and follow these people. And it's when you're following the right people, it becomes a great point of value.
You got any ugly on Twitter?
Yeah, I think ugly is just the fact that people could spew bullshit that could go viral and it could be bullshit. Like I think that's the biggest thing is that the good part is that solid information can travel very fast. So too can fake news, BS, all that stuff.
Yeah, dude, Twitter, I haven't been on there like until the crypto space made me go on there. Like, yeah, make sure you follow me on Twitter where I announce like what coin's going to pump, you know, first. So I was like, I kind of need to be on here to be in the crypto space and get the info properly. I got to turn Elon's tweets on to all notifications here. Yep. The thing that I've liked about it that I wish I should have just started this earlier, when I screenshot a Twitter post and post that on my Instagram, there's something about it that just provides credibility to your name. Well. Like it just looks like authority, right? Like sometimes I'll make these fancy infographics saying the same thing and it doesn't do as well as just like a screenshot of the Twitter post. And I'm like, well, this is a super easy way to just multi-purpose content, right? And if you're like, I need to create an Instagram post, but I'm not going to go on my story and type that out and post that on my regular feed because it just looks weird, right? Like it's just nice to go over to Twitter, type it out, post it, even if it's not going to go anywhere, and then just screenshot that and move it over. I've really liked that. And really the bad and the ugly doesn't exist as much with this platform compared to the other ones as far as the addicting nature. Mm-hmm. I think it's easy to like get what you want and get off Twitter. I think like really the only bad part is that there's not as many total users on there. And I think in like 2018 or 2019, I think they had like a total like loss of overall users on the app. So I was kind of thinking it was going away, but I bet, honestly, like probably Trump and Elon brought back Twitter. So just like those two people that you need to follow, or, you know, a lot of people are like, well, I'll get the app just to follow that person, probably helped a lot. And I can't imagine, you know, either of them really providing that same, like those messages on any other platforms, right? Like it's just kind of like a Twitter thing. Like on Facebook, even it would just be like,
it wouldn't do it.
Kind of weird. So, I don't think there's much ugly in Twitter apart from just it's not going to be this amazing growth source for most businesses. It's more industry specific where you're going to do well, right? Like, I don't know if like artists need to be on there. Like, I think it's just more like if you're in any kind of educational space, you probably should be though.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I love that you brought up the point of repurposing tweets, because it's crazy. You'll spend so much time, effort, and sometimes even money building out content to make it beautiful, and then a tweet that you posted in 2 seconds and screenshotted will do way better. So yeah, it's infuriating, but it's a good tool to have for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just like when people are on that scroll, it's just really easy for their mind to like comprehend, or something about like the white background, black text, and I don't know, it just laid out nicely. It definitely works well. Okay, so final verdicts here. let's say that you have emails, you have email marketing, and one social media. What is it?
That would depend on, am I a business owner or am I a personal brand? What am I?
Well, let's do a situation for each one. So let's say e-commerce, and then you're a coach.
Okay. So if I'm a coach, it's no brainer. It's YouTube and then email. Like no questions asked. Wouldn't hesitate. For like e-com or a business, it would be Instagram and email. I think that if you're a business owner, you have so many things going on that within the business, and the fact that it is easier to create Instagram content is going to help you out a lot. And the one-on-one nature of dealing with customers is going to be amplified on Instagram. It's far more difficult to do on YouTube. Even with a channel of my size, I can't possibly get back to every comment. There's just too many. So if you get big and you're a business, every transaction, every customer matters so much that you did get lost in the shuffle if you had a very big YouTube channel. Obviously a great problem to have, but that's what the two I'd start with.
Cool. I think I have a similar answer. Even though it hasn't been YouTube in the past, I've been answering Instagram. I think it's because I thought it was a lot more competitive than it was. I was like, oh, there's no chance to get on page one now. And now I'm like, I'm coming out with videos in the crypto space that are like page one, number one within the first like couple hours, just because you have to find a space that's got some open availability in it, but then also the amount of people who don't understand like the YouTube algorithm, yes. Like social media experts would at least go research and figure it out. Like a lot of people don't do things with respect to the YouTube algorithm that are posting on YouTube. So I think you can compete a lot easier than I thought. So my answer has changed from coaches being Instagram to YouTube email. E-commerce, it's going to be YouTube or Instagram, but it's going to be dependent on how well you actually know your market. So in e-commerce, there's a lot of people who do drop shipping in markets that they don't know anything about. Like to go over on YouTube and not be an expert on your topic is really difficult, right? Yes. So that's probably the hardest thing. Like you actually have to be an expert on your topic to do well on YouTube. On Instagram, you can just post pictures of your product and it's just a lot easier to foster that community and run ads. Like if you're going to run ads for e-commerce, you should do that on Facebook and Instagram rather than YouTube. It's pretty rare that you see YouTube ads for e-commerce, or I see it for like really big companies, but I don't really see it for like the everyday dropshipper running a lot of ads on there. So I would have to go with Instagram for most e-commerce businesses, unless you're a true expert on your space and just can put out all these videos of the search related buyer's intent words that someone would buy your product. Yeah. That'll probably do more for you, right? Like that's going to be more for your business in the end, creating just all these organic, all of these ongoing evergreen, pieces of content that are going to keep bringing in customers. But otherwise I'll probably have to agree with you on that one. We're supposed to debate, dude.
I know we're really screwing the pooch there, but, yeah, I think when things work, they work, and when they don't.
So what do you think, like 2022, do you think you're going to have a different answer?
I honestly don't think so, but you got to subscribe to the channel to find out for sure. You know, things do change. I don't know. I think I'm very curious to see what Instagram does, like their evolution there. I think that YouTube is a powerhouse that's not going away anywhere. And if they can get shorts right, it could be huge, but, it'll be very curious to see, and who knows, there'll probably be a platform that isn't even created yet that we'll be talking about next year.
Real quick question on YouTube shorts though. Should people look at it like TikTok, like just or like in reels, or should they look at it like a search intent reel?
So it does both. So people can find your shorts in anywhere they would find another video. So that's important to keep in mind, but for true shorts consumptions, all the data that I've seen shows that it's videos under 15 seconds that are performing better. And typically they're more entertainment based or that point of value, less educational at the given point. I'm sure it'll eventually get there, but right now it's very quick entertainment based, and even better if it loops.
Like the ending rolls back into the beginning.
Exactly.
Okay. Is that, so it's just so seamless that people just naturally like watch it
100%.
Multiple times.
Exactly. Yeah. So because the watch time is the biggest thing there as well. So just by having it looping, and if it's short, especially, so people don't catch right away necessarily that it's looped. That's now they've seen it twice, and that's all great metrics for you and YouTube in determining how far it's going to be pushed.
You know what? This is going to bring up one more topic for this because it's just a general social meet. It's very highly talked about in the space of multi-purposing content. Mm. And I found it to not be anywhere as smooth as most people make it out to be, right? Like basically, oh, you make a YouTube video, then you hire someone to chop that up into Instagram clips. You hire someone to turn that into blog for you. Then you post, like you turn into TikToks as well. And it's just like, whenever I take out my full length YouTube video and I have a video editor, like just go try to find the best tips. It's just like, there's so much context that gets lost that it's like, that tip doesn't even make sense. We're like in this short of a span. Like, it seems like it's ideal if you created individual content for each platform, although it's not ideal, you know, look just on paper. So what do you feel like, how underrated, overrated, or what's the good, bad, and the ugly of multi-purposing content?
Yeah. So I'd say overall, as like a blanket statement, I'd say it's overrated because of what you're going to get out of it. I think the benefit of that is coming, that may make it underrated, is how now all these platforms are focusing on vertical short form video. So now they're far closer to actually being comparables across the board. But the issue is, like, if you made a YouTube video, you're designing for that platform. So obviously you're going to get the most out of that on that platform. There are exceptions for this where like a clip from a podcast can do very well on TikTok, but 9 times out of 10, content designed for the consumption patterns of a platform is going to perform better. So you're just doing the opposite of that. So it's still some work, but if it's not in the way that people are conditioned to consume it, they're probably not going to consume it and you're not going to get much out of it. I'm a bigger believer in creating for the platform if that's your focus to grow over there, but it can be a great way to have some presence or give people additional consumption methods. But it also takes knowing the habits of each platform to even repurpose it for that. Like having an eye for, okay, this would work on TikTok. That takes time to develop that. So I think it depends on your situation. I think overall, a lot of people are doing it wrong. Because if you do it wrong, you're not really getting anything from it. So I think overall, overrated.
It's hurting your engagement because you're posting content not made for apps on those apps just to
exactly get it out. Just to get it out there. And I think that you're better served having dedicated content that is very conducive to the consumption experience that they're used to.
Yeah, like the vertical short form, like you're saying, like on paper, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. 9 by 16 is like YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels, TikTok, all of them, like highest organic reach, all of them the same format. For me to make a post that works on all three is really difficult, though, yeah. I've realized. I thought just take my YouTube videos and cut them up. But even then, it's like, it's still just like, well, this isn't like a search intent thing, like as YouTube is, right? So like, there's just still the fundamental differences of the platform that make content multiplying, that's what I was trying to think of before, not as simple as it may sound. Like I really kept trying to design my business of like, I show up for the podcast, everything else is done. And it's just like, when I make an Instagram post for Instagram, it just does so much better than trying to grab that audiogram from my podcast, where like on a podcast, you can take like 5 minutes to say one tip and it's acceptable, you know? So it's like if you're going to take an audiogram from a podcast, you better like chop that thing up, right? So it's like actually fast paced moving. So it's just, I'm straying away from it, even though multi-purposing content has been almost like my main focus over the last few months. I've just kind of seen that it wasn't nearly as easily implemented as I thought.
Yeah. I think in description of it, it sounds perfect, but when you actually apply it, I think you can quickly see if you track these things and if you compare it to content designed for the platform, it's typically not going to do as well. But obviously, this is a case-by-case thing. There are examples that are proving us completely wrong and crushing it, but they typically have either the know-how and time/support or a team to like do that. So it definitely is going to depend on your situation and your willingness to do things the right way and put the time in to do that.
The team is such a big part of it because it's really hard to hire help that understands the technicals of how the platform works, but also understands like what content should exist elsewhere. Like you're saying, you get an eye for like, oh, that would be good on TikTok, right? Like out of the YouTube video. And that's something that, you know, we've been doing this for years, that it's just hard to hire someone out that can instantly come in and just know exactly like what to do with it, right? It's just, it's difficult and it's your message, so it can get lost in translation.
It's definitely difficult to find someone that isn't super expensive, because like that is a skill in of itself, and you can hire someone, but when they give you the product, especially if they're not someone who's very well versed in this kind of social media language, they're going to edit it in a way where you're like, oh, I wouldn't have done it like that. And then you have the decision to make where it's like, do you spend the time and effort changing that? Because then it's just kind of defeating the purpose of outsourcing it. So yeah, it's definitely a multi-pronged issue, but it's something that you can work to hopefully get there. But I would say if you are hiring a team and they're not well-versed in social media, understand that you're probably going to have to coach them down that road and understand that should be part of your expectations.
And it's so hard to know, like, is this coachable or like the wrong person, right? Yes. Like hiring is the prettiest looking thing on paper and not at all in real life. I've gone through a lot of people to find some of the people that I have working for me today. So, All right, cool, man. Well, any other closing thoughts that you want to have here? I think we got to the gist of it. We discovered the best social media platforms, and it turns out we had the same thoughts on most everything. We kind of knew that was going to happen. We'll try to duel next time. Like when the Broncos play the Jaguars, then we will have our debate.
There we go. Yeah, and we do play this battle year, actually. And I think we're going to beat you guys this year, to be honest.
It's so quarterback dependent. Both situations. It's like whoever's quarterback plays better will probably win, you know. But do you know if we play each other this year?
We do. Yeah, I think it's like week 2 or 3. I think I'm almost positive we do. Let me see. Yeah, we do. Yep, September 19th.
Do you go to the games in
Florida? So I'll be at about 4 games this year. So I'll go to 3 in Jacksonville, and then I'm going to go to 1 in New England.
Why are you such a big Jacksonville fan?
So, a huge football fan. My dad's a big football guy. When I was like 10 years old, I had the game called NFL Street, and I loved running backs at the time. And I also loved their logo. So, they had a really cool logo. And then Fred Taylor was one of the best running backs in the league at that time. So it was a match made in heaven. And then from that point forward, I was a Jags fan.
I didn't know if you're going to say MJD.
I loved MJD, but I was actually a fan before they even had him.
Okay. Yeah, he was a little bit later, but okay, cool, man. Because in Canada, it's like, how do you choose your team out there?
Yeah.
But that's what I was saying at the beginning. I was like, I think a lot of people like the Jags just because they're cool. Their colors are so cool. So like what you said, like their logo helps a little bit. All right. Cool, man. Well, great talking to you. I will be speaking with you soon, I'm sure.
Sounds good, man. We'll talk soon.